Okay, so let's talk a little bit about second order derivatives. Okay, so let's consider our function from Rn to R. And let's suppose it's differentiable. Okay, for simplicity on the full space Rn. So. So, since it is differentiable, we know that directional derivatives exist for each direction d. Okay. And since it is differentiable everywhere, this directional derivative exists at every x. So, this exists. So we can consider them as functions. Okay? Since they are defined for every x, we can consider them as the function which maps x into the partial derivative of f in the direction d at x. Okay? So this is, once again, a function from Rn to R. So, directional derivatives can be considered as functions. And if you consider them as functions, you can apply everything we discussed in these two lectures on calculus for function of several variables. In particular, well, you can try to check if it has directional derivatives. Okay? So, if the derivative has itself directional derivatives, we know that the directional derivative, let's say in the direction v, of this function, which is itself a directional derivative, is by definition the limit for t that goes to zero whenever you compute it at a point x of the derivative of f with respect to d computed where in x plus t times you are doing the derivative in the direction v, so t times v minus the function that is the derivative with respect to d computed at x, and you divide this difference by t. Okay. So this is the directional derivative of the directional derivative if this limit exists. Okay? If this derivative exists, is generally called second order derivative of f in the direction v and d. So this is the standard notation. Partial squared f over partial v partial d at x. Okay? So these are second order directional derivatives. Notice that it is not enough to have the derivative at the point, because to compute the derivative of the derivative, you must take the value of the derivative at other points. Okay? So it must exist at least in a neighborhood of the considered point. I took the full space Rn for simplicity. Okay? We will focus only on the partial derivatives. Okay? The second order parts of derivatives okay same so we are taking v and d to be two of the vectors of the canonical basis of Rn okay and so the general notation is the derivative of second order so partial square f with respect to xj and xi okay and this gives you the order of the in which you take derivatives you first take the derivative with respect to xi and then you take the derivative with respect to xj okay and the definition is exactly the same so allow me not to write it again okay you just put xj and xi here no sorry xj so this is xi yeah and this is aj and we say that f has second order partial derivatives if all these limits exist for all pairs I and j okay f has second order partial derivative at a point means that the function has the partial derivatives first order partial derivatives at least in a ball centered in the point and the partial derivative and the partial derivative have partial derivative as well okay so maybe it's better than correct so f has second order partial derivatives at some point x bar in Rn if f as the let's say first order just to understand what we are speaking about partial derivatives at each x in a ball of center x bar in the radius epsilon for some positive epsilon and second condition the first order partial derivatives have partial derivatives too okay notice just this issue to have second order partial derivative at a point the first order derivative must exist in a ball around the point okay We have seen an example for n equal 2 on Tuesday that is the function
how was it? Sin of P x1 times x2.
Okay? And indeed, we computed, let's say, the derivative with respect to x1, which was p times x2 cos p times p x1 times x2. Okay. You see, this is a function again. Okay. Now you can take, for instance, the derivative with respect to x2. Okay. And you can compute it. Exercise for you. Or you could take here the derivative with respect to x2, so here you have x1, and generally this is xi, this is xi, and you can compute the derivative in which you change the order in which you make the derivatives. And you can get the result. Or you can take the derivative with respect to the same variable. Okay? You could also take the derivative of f with respect to x1 of the derivative with respect to x1. Okay? To simplify notation, when you make the derivative twice with respect to the same variable, the standard notation is to replace the double partial xi with a partial xi squared. Okay? And you could compute also this. So, exercise for you at home. Okay? Simple exercise just to keep in mind the derivatives. You make the first derivative, so you consider x1 as a variable. And you get that function. Then you pick x1 and consider just x2 as a variable, and you compute the derivative. Okay? And you can make all the four pieces. You have them on the lecture notes so that you can check if you did the right computation. What you will find here is that if you make these two, you first take the derivative with respect to x1 and then with respect to x2. And you take the derivative first with respect to x2 and then with respect to x1, you get the same function. Yeah, that's it. So this is not a case. This is not a special case for this function. This is a general result. That if you have appropriate conditions, the order in which you take the derivatives is not relevant. Okay? And the theorem is a formula. It's called sparse theorem, or the inversion of the order of derivation. Okay. So let's take a point. And let's suppose that f has second order partial derivatives, let's say with respect to xi and xj, and with respect to xj and xi for some I and j, once again at each X in a ball centered in X bar and with radius epsilon for some positive epsilon. Okay? If both the derivatives are continuous at X bar, then you can switch the order in which you take the derivatives, meaning that the derivative of F with respect to xi first and xj afterwards at x bar is equal to the derivative of F with respect to xj first and xi afterwards at x bar. Okay. So, unless you have bad functions, the order in which you take derivatives doesn't matter much. Okay? Well, if you see here these first order derivatives in our example, they are pretty good functions. Okay? They are continuous everywhere, so the theorem works. And this gives us, this results the idea of a new definition, taking the existence of second order partial derivatives and their continuity. We will say that F is twice continuously differentiable at some point x bar in Rn if it has second order partial derivatives at each point in a ball around x bar, if it has second order partial derivatives at, once again, each x bar in a ball of center x bar and radius epsilon for some epsilon greater than zero, and these derivatives are continuous at x bar. There's another very relevant concept. So let's suppose our function f has all second order partial derivatives. We can put them all together in a matrix. Okay. So whenever f has second order derivatives, you can put them in a matrix like this. You take the derivative with respect to x1 twice at a given point. You take the derivative with respect to x1 first and x2. No, sorry, with respect to x2 first and x1 afterwards. And you take the derivative of f with respect to xn first and with respect to x1 afterwards. And then you do the same in the other rows. You take, in the generic row, you take, in the generic ith row, you take the derivative with xj first and with respect to xi afterwards, so that the last is the derivative with respect to x1 first and xn afterwards, and the last element of the matrix is the derivative with respect to xn twice. Okay. You can put all the derivatives in a matrix in this way, and this matrix, which is generally denoted by nabla square of f at x, is called the Hessian matrix of f at x. Whenever you have all the second order partial derivatives, you can take these integers, which will be very relevant to us. Notice, suppose your function is twice continuously differentiable. Exactly. Since you have first results telling you that you can switch the order of derivatives, this matrix is symmetric. This element and this element are equal, this element and this other element are equal, and so on. So, if your f is twice continuously differentiable, the matrix is symmetric, which gives you a relevant property, which is a relevant property of symmetric matrices.
It's equal to
this is the definition, not a property. Yeah, the eigenvalues are all real numbers, no complex eigenvalue. Okay, and we can exploit the Hessian matrix in for twice continuously differentiable function to get some more formulas, some more Taylor's type formulas involving second order derivatives. So, let's suppose f is twice continuously differentiable on the full space. You can prove this Taylor's formula, which tells you that, which gives you an expression for the remainder in this Taylor's formula that I kept on the blackboard for the whole lecture. Whenever you take V, X bar is fixed, there exists some T in
0, 1,
such that, let me write it in the shortest way, the residual in this first order Taylor's formula at V is exactly
what did I write? No. But that's right. Yeah. So I spotted another mistake in my notes.
1/2 V transposed the Hessian matrix of F computed at x bar plus t times v times v. Okay? So, this is telling you that the residual has this form. If f is twice continuously differentiable, you have Taylor formulas and the residual has this form. Is related to the Hessian computed in a suitable point. Okay? On the line connecting X bar and V. Once again, like in the mean value theorem, this is an existent theorem. It tells you that there exists a value. There exists a step t, but you don't know how to compute it. So it's a formula for the residual, but theoretical once again. Okay. Clearly, if you have some good information on the second order derivatives, you can exploit it. Okay, but not if you have the information on a specific point. But let's say in a ball around your in a ball containing x bar, the segment which unites x bar plus x bar and v, because I didn't tell you explicitly, x bar times v is a point in this segment in Rn. Okay, so if you have information on the Hessian here on the full segment, you can exploit it. And we also have another Taylor's formula, second order Taylor's formula, which tells you the following. Suppose your f is twice continuously differentiable, so everything we are saying works under this assumption, and we have the following. For each v in Rn, f computed at x bar plus v is exactly f computed at x bar plus the scalar product between the gradient of f at x bar and v plus 1/2 v transposed the Hessian matrix of f at x bar v plus some residual. Again, a residual which depends on f, on the considered point, and is a function of v. And the property is the following for the residual. For some, let's say, residual function v, such that if you compute the residual at v, and you divided it by the square of the norm of V, that goes to zero whenever the norm of V goes to zero. Okay? So this residual goes to zero faster than the residual of the first order Taylor's formula.
Okay?
We will mainly use the first order Taylor's formula, but sometimes we will also use this second order Taylor's formula. Sometimes here,
some way here, you are providing a different kind of approximation of values.
Okay, because you have the same affine constant plus linear term you had before, but here you also have this term. Which kind of term is this? So, this you will have a polynomial in the components of V in V1 Vn, which is the degree of the polynomial. When you make V transpose AV and you consider V1 Vn. So, what is this? If you write it, you make Vn times A1, sorry, and so on, and then you multiply it by V1 Vn. Here you have a sum, and if sum is of the kind ij, bi, bj. So these are coefficients, and these are polynomial of degree 2. Okay? So, with first order Taylor's formula, you had an approximation with linear terms. Here you have an approximation where you have linear and quadratic terms. And I will focus on it just now. This will be called quadratic functions. So, a quadratic function is a function f which has this form. F at x is equal to 1/2 x transpose qx plus b transpose x plus c, where q is an n times n matrix, b is a vector in Rn, and c is a number. The functions who have this form are called quadratic functions. If you want, you can write it explicitly this way. One half the sum over k and L from 1 to n of q kl xk xl plus the sum
for k that goes from 1 to n of bk xk plus c. Okay?
You have written it explicitly. Well, we can suppose that this matrix is symmetric without any loss of generality. Why? Here, xk and xl appear twice. Let's say xi and xj appear twice. Once when k is equal to I and l is equal to j, and once when k is equal to j and l is equal to 1. So here you have qij xi xj plus qji xi xj times xi. Okay? If they are equal, this for all i's and j, this means the matrix is symmetric. If they are not equal, you know that this can be written as qij plus qji divided by 2, which multiplies xi xj plus the same thing, qij plus qji divided by 2, then multiplies xj and xi, and clearly xj, xi, and xi, xj are the same thing, so that if they are not equal, you can replace them by these values and you get exactly the same function. So if Q is not symmetric, you can replace it by Q plus Q transpose all divided by 2, the symmetric part of Q. Okay? And you get exactly the same function. So in a quadratic function, you can assume that the matrix of the second order terms is always symmetric. So let's go back to Taylor's formula, second order formula. And once again, this formula is good, provides a good approximation when V is very small. Let's say V is something like x minus x bar, which is close to zero, means that x is close to x bar. And you can rewrite this once again. Just substitute, you get that f of x is given by f at x bar plus the scalar product of the gradient of f at x bar with x minus x bar, plus 1 half x minus x bar transpose the Hessian matrix of f at x bar times x minus x bar plus the residual. So you, if that is very small, then you can throw away the residual and say that f at x is approximately this value. Okay? And x bar is fixed. Okay? This is a quadratic function. You can write it in this form. And you can do exactly in this way, because this is equal to 1 half x transpose Hessian matrix of f at x bar x plus, I don't know it by heart, so let me check,
the gradient of f at x bar minus the Hessian matrix at x bar times x bar all transpose x plus, you can write it by yourself, a term which depends only on x bar, so it's a constant value. Okay? Is f at x bar plus this scalar product plus these terms that come
from here when you develop the computation. So this is a quadratic function where this is Q and this is B. Okay? On the notes you find also the formula for C. So this is telling you that if you are very near to x bar and your function is twice continuously differentiable, you can approximate it with a quadratic function. Okay? So if you are considering just one dimension, quadratic functions are what? Yeah, but which kind of polynomial? The degree here is 2, the degree here is 1, so it's some coefficients for x squared plus some coefficients for s. What is it? High school. Which a parabola. Okay. This is telling you that if you have second order derivatives at a point, actually you have a continuously differentiable function at the point x bar, you can try to approximate the function with a parabola. Okay. With an appropriate parabola. Probably here the parabola is done in some different way. Okay? And the approximation is better and better as you are closer and closer to x bar. Okay, so it's 1 o'clock. Let's stop. We are almost over with calculus background. I just want to do 2 things on Tuesday. First, let's compute the gradient and the Hessian metric of a quadratic function. So please try to do it as an exercise during the weekend. Okay? Suggestion: compute the partial derivative with respect to a generic xi. And then its derivative with respect with some xj, and you get the gradient and the Hessian matrix. And then we will check it on Tuesday. And then I will show you some pictures. And then we are done with calculus background. Okay, so let's meet again on Tuesday.